This is a podcast from BBC Radio's news and sports station,
5Live.
To find out more about 5Live and its sister service, 5Live Sports Extra, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5Live.
Mark Kermode wanders in fresh as a daisy from the United States of America.
I'm not fresh at all because I'm still wearing exactly the same clothes that I wore when I went out there to interview George Lucas and then do a whole bunch of filming and then on the plane back. I mean, obviously, the outside is the same. Underneath, everything is clean.
But why were you filming with George Lucas?
Because I'm making this this programme for Culture Show BBC Two, this thing about Steven Spielberg. It's a long interview with Steven Spielberg, who's very nice, and who I saw again when we were out there, and he said, "Hi, Mark, how are you?"
Hey, how about that?
Which is very strange.
Did you say to George Lucas, as you said on the air many times,
you couldn't direct
your
traffic
way out of a wet
No,
bag.
Because we weren't talking about Lucas's films. We were talking about Spielberg's films. But here's a very interesting thing. Lucas said at one point, agreed with me about Spielberg's sentimentality. Lucas said that he thought the end of Schindler's List was really overdoing it. Which, you know, I mean, I didn't then say, yeah, but I think episodes 1, 2, and 3 were really overdoing it. Yourself, George.
Why didn't you say that?
Because we weren't talking about his films. We were talking about Spielberg's films. I mean, it would be a very different matter if it was having to interview him about Star Wars. Because what you'd have to say at the beginning, obviously, I hate Star Wars. I hate it
so much, but I'll still take some gifts for my kids if you've got any.
Oh well, my little boy loves Star Wars. My little boy absolutely loves Star Wars, and I am open minded enough to say that just because his father is, you know,
a bigot
doesn't mean that my kids should grow up to be the same. My kids like loads of stuff that I don't like. My kids love Busted.
They split up ages ago.
Who, my kids? Or Busted?
No, Busted.
Busted. Well, there we go. They still ring around our house.
So
they did the theme music to the Thunderbirds
your
movie.
Your kids are as outdated as you are, almost.
That would. Well, I hope that I'm instilling something into them of the nostalgic charm of always being 5 years behind the charts.
We have some reviews coming up of Children of Men and Is it Clerks 2?
Clerks 2.
I mean, Clerks. I say Clerks 2, no, but a lot of people say Clerks.
It's Clerks because it's American, so therefore they are Clerks.
Yeah, but over here it's
They're
Clerks.
Yeah, but Clerks 2 sounds like a new pair of school shoes. And anyway,
I had them with a little compass in the.
That's right. Yeah, the action.
In case you got lost while you were raking your.
They
way
were called
the
Wayfarers,
woods.
The Clark's oh, Wayfarers. Right? Yeah, you could go off into the woods and you thought, "Oh gosh, I'm lost. I'll just open up the heel of my Wayfarer shoes."
Oh dear, it fell out years ago. Never
it
mind.
It didn't work anyway.
Dirty Sanchez and Keane.
Yes,
felt exactly the same as the band.
Yes, but not and nothing, nothing like them. The band. Incidentally, can I just say on the conversation that you were having a couple of weeks ago about how everybody hates James Blunt. You know, we were having this critics
rather
discussion.
Unfairly. Yes.
No, I just wanted to. I didn't say this at the time because there wasn't any space. Just that I hated James Blunt before anybody else. I always hated James Blunt. He was always horrible, and I hate that song which features in that movie Closer, which I hate.
Yeah. So.
I just wanted to be clear that I hated James
Blunt.
The
point was that he got some good reviews, and then
not for me. Didn't
yeah? But since when were you a music critic?
No, I'm not. But I just always hated him. The first minute I heard a millisecond of his voice, I wanted to throw things.
It might be that people hated him before you, but no text, no emails today.
No,
for a very good reason.
Yep.
Apparently, box office top 10. First of all, at 10, Right at Your Door.
Near post-apocalyptic fun with just two people and a basic plot flaw. You'd open the door.
Yes, we've already sorted that one. Number 9 is The Sentinel. Quite good if you watch it on a plane.
The Blair Brown feud continues, yes. Thanks to The Sentinel.
Blair Brown is in it, and I think it wasn't quite. You know, if
it's
you've
not
got
rubbish,
else
but it's not in the line of fire.
No, absolutely not. DOA, Dead or Alive.
I mean, just it's rubbish. It shouldn't be in cinemas. It should be on straight to video. It is the kind of one-handed computer game spin-off that's entirely aimed at spotty adolescents who've never actually had conversations with girls, and it's terrible.
7, The Night Listener.
Robin Williams wants you to feel his pain, and I wanted Robin to feel some of my pain.
6 is Little Miss Sunshine.
Which is nothing like as funny or as acid and edgy as many people think. It's perfectly fine, but it's not a masterpiece. And it soft pedals too much on the horror of American beauty competitions.
All right, so nothing to do with the Mr. Men series?
No. Is there a Little Miss Sunshine?
There's lots of Little Miss. I don't know if there's a Little Miss Sunshine, but there's lots of Little Miss.
I think there is a Little Miss Sunshine. Yeah, no, it's the Little Miss Sunshine beauty pageant in America. Beauty pageants in America are very strange. Though.
Little Man at 5.
Yeah, which, as we've already established, evil, bad, vile, and possessed by the devil.
You, Me, and Debris at 4.
Not that funny. You know, moderate, passing, fair, couple of laughs.
Now, you said Black Dahlia.
Yeah.
But
I said Black Dahlia.
Let's call
the whole thing off. Well, here's the thing. In America, they say Dahlia. And since the case isn't, again, it's like Clerks, it's an American case. I mean, there really was a Black Dahlia case. There really was a woman who got murdered that was then called the Black Dahlia case and was, in theory, the most notorious unsolved crime in American history. They called it the Black Dahlia. But it's like Terminator 2 Judgment Day. You know, because the Americans can't spell it, or Pearl Harbor.
What do you mean, because they can't?
Well, it is still Pearl Harbor because it's an American thing, and therefore it is Harbor. I mean, it's not their fault. They're a new nation, really.
They went wrong a couple hundred years ago. You just stayed part of the empire.
I did say, as I arrived in America, "Hello, I've come from England to ask for the country back."
Speaking of which, the Queen at number two.
Again, it's a television thing. It's a very good piece of television, but it is television. I mean, I don't understand why it's become such a great big deal. You know, it's done very well in the box office, but it's a television piece.
And the UK's number one is Talladega Nights.
Again, only moderately funny. Only moderately funny, and nothing like
pretty
as funny as it ought
to be. Pretty impressive list, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it is. And Sacha Baron Cohen's the funniest thing in it, and I don't think he's that funny.
So they're all pretty rubbish. So maybe there'll be something slightly more inspiring.
Well, let's start off with Children of Men, new movie by Alfonso Cuarón, who was the guy who made Harry Potter and The Prisoner of Azkaban, which is the best of the Harry Potter movies. And before
Correct.
That, he made Y Tu Mamá También. This is a dystopian future fantasy based on the work of P.D. James, set in near future Britain, which is complete. Everything's fallen apart, totally overrun by terrorist bombings. All immigration has become illegal and immigrants are being treated really, really badly. Everything has fallen apart. Worst of all, people have lost the ability to reproduce. The youngest person in the world has just recently died, and there is no longer any reproduction. Suddenly, a small band of terrorists, outlaws, whatever you want to call them, find themselves in possession of a pregnant woman, perhaps the only pregnant woman in the world. And their job is to get her, strangely enough, to Bexhill so that she can then be taken on to the Human Project. Bexhill, not as is thought of in the Goon Show, you know, the dreaded batter pudding hurler of Bexhill on sea, but Bexhill has now become, well, Beirut, really. I mean, it's just the most unbelievable war zone. I thought it was a really interesting film. Very dark, very grim, very sort of overpowering dystopian future vision. Reminded me a lot of Brazil. I mean, it is true that Britain does dystopian visions better than almost any other country. You think of things like 1984. You think of, I always think of, you know, Brazil as being the classic vision of this. This comes in that line. It's just about credible. It's taken an area that you know quite well. You remember Danny Boyle's 28 Days Later?
Yes.
Remember that vision of, like, just post-apocalyptic London when the world had started to fall apart, but it was still recognisable. You could still get on the motorway and drive from London to Manchester. You just might get eaten by zombies on the way. Well, it's like that. Everywhere looks like news footage, war zone footage, and yet it's still recognisable as the outskirts of London, the landmarks of London, and the bits of Bexhill. Very, very well played. An outstandingly good cameo by Michael Caine, who I have to say has been so off the ball recently. I mean, Michael Caine usually, when he does a cameo, comes on, does some mad guy and does, you know, hello, blah, 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 Michael Caine, blah, blah, and everybody gives him an award because they think that he's Michael Caine. They give him an award just for being Michael Caine. In this, he's actually very good as an eccentric eco-warrior who has retreated to the woods and is part of the, you know, the vanguard of freedom fighters, but he doesn't over-egg it. He does a very good Michael Caine performance. In many ways, he reminded me of the performance that he gave in Educating Rita, which, you remember that, in which he plays a drunk, but he reins it in, and he does it in a way which is really convincing. And I thought the film looked terrific. It had a really overpowering atmosphere. Yes, it's grim. Yes, it's bleak. It ends up on a very big religious allegorical point, because the question is, this woman who is pregnant, is it somehow this pregnancy the second coming?
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, obviously...
Omen 3.
Well, no, Omen 3 was the second coming of the devil. Oh, no, but of course at the end of Omen 3 it was the second coming of Christ, wasn't there?
As I recall.
Because it ends up with the devil is there, but then Jesus turns up.
You must get the devil and the Lord sorted out.
No, no, but it's because the whole point about Damien is that Damien is the son of the Antichrist, but at the end they end up in that church.
As the second coming, I'm sure it was.
No, no, he's defeated everybody. Yeah, and then what happens is then there is the second coming, and it turns out that whilst they were all chasing around the Antichrist's son, the Christ child came back, but he just doesn't turn up until the end of...
And is that what happens here?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, because I said that there is a religious element to the end of it. That's all I'm saying. There is a religious sense to the end of the movie this child is going to be born again. And is there some sort of metaphysical aspect to it? I happen to think there was, so I didn't think it was quite as grim as everybody else thought it was.
I thought we'd had our fill of dystopia this week, because J.G. Ballard in...
Oh yes, how was he?
He was very good.
Did you ask him about Crash?
We talked about Crash, yes, and he does dystopian stuff.
Yes, he does.
And
nobody else.
It's a shopping mall in his new book.
Yeah, that would be
so
him.
Anyway, we don't want to talk about that because he had half an hour, and you've only had a few minutes.
So moving swiftly on, yeah. Also out this week, Dirty Sanchez the movie, which is basically Jackass with a bunch of Welsh blokes going around the country reenacting the seven deadly sins, which generally seem to involve drinking each other's bodily excretions, engaging in profoundly homoerotic encounters that they then pretend are nothing to do with that. And whenever anyone suggests that any of them may be gay, they hit each other, nailing pieces of their anatomy to, you know, pieces of wood or to each other. And generally drinking beer out of orifices which are not designed to have beer. Now, I have a number of problems with this. Firstly, I don't care about these people.
I can imagine.
First, I mean, what I would like them to do is I'd like them to all go off to a club together and do what it is they clearly want to do and fine and stop inflicting it on the rest of us, you know?
What,
it,
sort of it's, blow up balloons and
no,
and have
men together.
Rolls?
It's like the whole thing is the most...
Mano-mano.
It is the most unbelievable sort of repressed... You know, we're all guys together. We're all really butch. We're all really manly. We're all really straight. And the way we want to demonstrate this is we want to drink each other's bodily fluids and run around
have
naked had, together.
But don't you ever have that feeling?
Well, I like Richard Gere. You know, okay. I'm much more at home with my polymorphous perversity. I have no problem with it. As you know, I believe that everybody has that kind of aspect. But this is a very rugby player-y type of, you know, what they used to call rugger buggers in our school. People so militantly manly, yet whilst...
That they must be gay.
That they must have baths together. No, it's not just they must be gay. And they're not gay. That's the whole point. They're not gay. What they are is...
I bet they are.
They are blokes... who have got a thing with blokes, but they don't want... At one point, they go off
Sorry,
to...
blokes have a thing with blokes is gay.
Well, it would be if they could just develop into that. I mean, they're on a lower rung down the way. If they could just accept their feelings, then maybe they'd stop driving staples through their genitals, which is what they spend most of this movie doing. It's rubbish. It's not a movie. It's not clever. It's not big. It's not funny. And the bit in which one of them attempts to drink the fat that has been scooped out of his best friend's stomach...
That wouldn't...
It's hideous.
That wouldn't be a favourite.
Which brings us to Clerks 2.
Clerks 2.
Well, I think it has to be Clerks because I can't say Clerks 2. The two characters who, when Kevin Smith started out, independent filmmaker, and, you know, he started out making this movie in a convenience store with these two characters who just talked nonsense, talked about Star Wars, talked rubbish, basically. And it was hilariously funny. And what they said was very rude and very pithy and very witty and very funny. And I remember I reviewed Clerks for Q magazine. I said it was the rudest film I'd ever seen. And yet there is not a single frame of nudity in it. It's just people talking in this disgusting way. Kevin Smith then went on to do some interesting films. He made Dogma, which you very much like, right?
Oh, that was terrific, yes.
Yeah. His career fell apart and he ended up making that absolute Bennifer abomination, Jersey Girl. Remember that?
No.
With Ben Affleck.
I think you warned me. Oh, hang on.
Yeah, Ben Affleck's in it. But Ben Affleck's in a couple of his things. But Ben Affleck's in it. At the very beginning, Ben Affleck is married to Jennifer Lopez, but she makes a very, very good decision and she drops dead in the first 10 minutes. And he is then left on his own having a middle-aged crisis.
No, I didn't see
and it was
that.
Very much the product of Kevin Smith, you know, this nerdy bloke has grown up. Now, it's a terrible film. I think even Kevin Smith thinks it's a terrible film now. So he decided to go back to where he came from, make Clerks 2. The same two characters, at the beginning of the movie, they burn down the convenience store. So they then have to go and get a job in a burger place. So they're now in a burger place, and they're now in colour rather than in black and white. They've grown up. They've got fatter. They've got when Kevin Smith
That's
was on the
does.
Thing. No, but when Kevin Smith was on the program, remember he said it's a movie in which the spare tire is one of the leading characters. You see everybody. You see them. You see Randall and Dante, and you see Jay and Silent Bob. They're a bit bigger and a bit chubby and a bit older and a bit grayer. And actually, that's the melancholic side of it. On the other hand, they're still talking the same old trash. Dante is now engaged. Remember in the first film, he was basically tempted to get back with his girlfriend and his best friend didn't want him to do it. In this one, he's going to get married, but his best friend doesn't want him to do it. So it's the same thing, only with 12 years different. Now, on the one hand, there is a melancholic charm to this because I like those characters, or at least I did like them. I liked them 12 years ago. Now that they're grown up and older and they should be wiser, and in fact they're not, they're just the same stupid blokes, they're just a little bit fatter and they're still talking about the same stuff, some of the gag has definitely worn off. And I have to say the jokes are very, very thin on the ground. And if you watched it just in it on its own terms, is this a funny comedy with a bunch of people doing funny stuff? The answer is no, it isn't. I think what I gave it, I gave it the benefit of the doubt occasionally because I sort of felt like, well, it's nice to see Kevin Smith at least getting back onto ground in which he's not completely lost. And I did like these characters once, and I do have fond memories of literally nearly wetting myself laughing the first time I saw Clarks. Me and Bob McCabe sat in the Odeon Leicester Square and screamed like hyenas to the point that I thought they were going to throw us out because we couldn't contain ourselves.
I'd have had you thrown out.
Yes, I know, but you wouldn't have gone to see the movie. But it's nothing like on that same level. There just aren't enough laughs. It's not smart enough. Some of the script is fairly, you know, is fairly naff. However,
slightly naff, says the man whose socks say mine's a pint.
Yeah, I've just got off a plane. These were given to me by...
You chose to put them on.
No, I didn't. As I left the house to go to the plane, it was dark. This was the pair of socks I grabbed. It wasn't until I was on the plane that I realised that I was wearing a pair of socks that said mine's a pint.
Just tricky.
Thank you very much.
Just tricky to accuse something of being naff.
Okay, I'm going to do one more and then I'm going to go because I think that, you know, you're getting tired of me. So the other thing to say is there is this movie at Keane with Damien Lewis. Damien Lewis, who we had on the program.
I'm sure we did.
Okay, Damien Lewis came on the program, and it's a film directed by Lodge Kerrigan. And the story is that this man is wandering around an American city, having lost his daughter and falling apart in his search for her. And it's one of those films which you could hardly say, you couldn't recommend it as a great Friday night film. Lodge Kerrigan made a film called Clean Shaven before, which I actually really liked. I introduced on Film 4 or Channel 4, I think, and it's a very good, arty piece of work. And this shows a real progression from that. It has a sort of siren song performance at the centre of it by Damien Lewis as this man who is completely rattled, completely falling apart, borderline schizophrenic. You don't know how much of what he thinks is real, how much of what he thinks is delusional. He makes friends with a single mother who may not be a single mother. She may actually have a husband. He almost abducts a child himself because he's so desperately trying to find his own. And it's a film about loss. It's a film about desperation. It's a film about people unwinding. It's a film about somebody coming apart in front of the camera. I can't say that it was a hugely, richly rewarding experience, but it was very convincing and very draining and actually quite upsetting, but in a way that made me admire the art of it.
Doesn't sound as though it's sort of veering towards, oh, there she is at the end.
No, it doesn't veer towards her, there she is. But what it did do, and the last word on this, it reminded me of the new Friedkin film, Bug, which again centres on somebody who has lost a child going completely crazy. And again, I thought it had an extraordinary emotional intensity. As you know, when Friedkin was on when we were in Cannes, I think that's the best film I saw in Cannes. I loved that film. This is oddly enough a sort of companion piece. It's nothing like as good, but it's a sort of companion piece.
In general, going to the cinema, if you've got kids and watching a movie about a parent falling apart because they've lost a kid, that's not going to.
That's why I say
specialist audiences only.
That's why I say I admire it, and I would introduce it.
Yes, but not watch it.
Well, no, I've watched it. I don't think I'd say, you know, I've got half an hour free. You know what? I'm going to go and watch that film about the guy wandering around.
I'm going to go and watch The X Factor.
Having lost his
why,
kid.
Why Keane?
That's his name.
That's a bit boring.
Yeah, it's not because they provided the soundtrack or it's not because he's really keen.
Right, so movie of the week?
Well, I would say Children of Men, which is a very good piece of work, and it's further demonstration that Alfonso Cuarón is a proper director. He got Harry Potter on track. He did, you know, he proved he could take on a mainstream project. This is equally mainstream and it's got stars and all the rest of it, but I think it's a worthy sort of successor to Brazil.
If you have enjoyed listening to this, don't forget there are two podcasts on the programme. There's the podcast which features these movie reviews, which you can download and subscribe to via the Five Live website and iTunes. It's all there. And then also there's the Daily Mayo, which you can get via the same sources. That's it. Have a good weekend.